This is the Greening USA Focus Greater Syracuse Mayoral Debate. This is focused on sustainability of the city of Syracuse in a variety of forms, as some questions will indicate. I'm Chris Boltz, WAER News and Public Affairs Director. I just want to say thank you to everyone attending. This is citizenship. Getting involved in elections and learning about candidates is very important to our democracy, as I'm sure you all know. Really, thank you to the candidates. I know you have busy schedules. You've done a ton of these things. You know, really appreciate you making yourselves so public. Voters can find out about you and meet you. They don't just have to read something online, so that's very important. Also, thanks to the sponsoring organizations, WAER is proud and honored to take part with Greening USA and Focus Greater Syracuse. You know, this is a unique election for a variety of reasons. One obvious one is that there are four candidates, really five, but four campaigning candidates on the ballot, none of whom is an incumbent because of the term limits, obviously. It's a unique time in the city's history. There's plenty of progress going on. There's building. There's investment. People are moving here. Even millennials are interested in our older city. In one publication, we're one of the top places for millennials to live. There's other positive attention that's been going on in the city. At the same time, there are mounting challenges of fiscal stress. Tax base is always an issue, obviously. Rising costs, school quality is an issue that impacts a lot of things. And poverty statistics, as we know, have been drawing state and even national attention, not for good reasons. Also, it's a unique time in national politics and the political mood. A lot of policies and decisions that are made at the federal level often are dividing people rather than bringing us together around solutions or working on any problems. So voters in the city's upcoming election will choose the person they believe can most effectively make progress in these and other areas. We hope this forum helps you attending today make a decision, and those that will hear it on air and online can make the best informed decision. By the way, if you want to hear this again or you want to share it with somebody, WAER will air an hour-long version of this tomorrow night at 6. The entire debate audio will be online, I'm hoping tonight, maybe tomorrow morning. So I'd like to lay out the format for what's ahead. We're going to start with opening statements from each candidate. We'll have a first segment of prepared questions from the sponsoring organizations that cover various aspects of sustainability, fiscal, environmental, civic. Candidates will have a minute to respond to any of those questions. We'll rotate through who gets to answer it first, but everybody will get to answer every question. A second segment will be audience questions. You guys have cards on your table that you can submit. Liz and Katie are here with me to help, and they'll be collecting the questions throughout. We'll kind of go through those and edit them out a little bit just so that we don't ask the same question four times. Again, each candidate will answer each question or get an opportunity to. If you want to direct something at a specific candidate, you certainly can, but the other candidates will have a chance to respond. And then if time permits, we'll come to the audience with our roving microphone and do a little face-to-face. But we're going to try to end at about 1:30 and go to closing statements to honor your guys' times. So we just randomly chose who would start with opening statements. I'm sure this has happened in other debates. And Laura Levine, you won.
You win. So
we'll go with you and then just come right down the table.
Great, thank you.
So thanks for an opening statement.
Thank you. Chris, it's really great to see you in person. As I mentioned to you, I'm a speech pathologist by training, and I'm really interested in people's voices, not the least of which is my own, which I'm losing. But it's really a pleasure and just fun to meet you in person. So thank you to everybody who organized this event today. One of my best friends once saw me wearing the color green and said, "Don't ever do it. You look like you're near death." So it's only for you today that I wore green, because I just kind of want to go. And hopefully it'll distract you from the fact that I make too many papers and I print too much in newspapers. So thank you again, everybody, for being here. My name's Laura Levine. I'm the Republican candidate for the office of mayor. I'm a lifelong resident of Syracuse. I've been in public education for 40 years, 30 years as a school leader, most recently as a school superintendent. I think Syracuse has a great deal of potential. I think Syracuse needs to get back on the right track, but sadly we're on the wrong track, and several polls have showed that the majority of people feel that way. I'm probably not using the microphone. Okay, I'm getting that look from Cassie. So the majority of people in at least two polls have revealed that they think Syracuse is on the wrong track. I think Syracuse can be put back onto the right track. We can have a turnaround, but we need the right leadership to do that. I have leadership experience. I have executive leadership experience. Oh, we have 15 seconds. Thank you. Have what it takes in terms of knowledge, ability, collaboration, experience to get Syracuse on the right track. Our number one priority needs to be public safety. We have not done a good enough job with public safety. Schools will be another topic. I know we'll be talking about that today, so I'm looking forward to exploring all these topics in more detail. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Laura. Great. Good morning, everyone. Good afternoon. Thank you so much for being here. I especially like the forums when we're not talking about the same issues, but we're talking about issues of a special expertise so we can learn as we go through this and talk to you about what we've been doing. So I am not a politician. I've never run for public office. I am a mother of four grown children, a grandmother. I own my home in Strathmore. And I have been a public servant in the city area for over 25 years now. And I chose to do this because I believe in the potential of the city, and I believe the new direction we need to go in needs to be with someone who is not an insider, someone that will not give us the same old thing, someone that will actually be inclusive and put their arms around everyone in this community to make sure that as we move forward, we are sustainable and we are environmentally healthy. And that's what I promised to do, not only in my city, but I've been doing it in my own neighborhood, in the renovations of my home, with regard to the way I've hired locally, the way I've ensured I've had green efforts within my own home, focusing on beautification efforts. I am an outspoken advocate on my street for beautification with roundabouts that I think are easily done and slow traffic down, and focusing on carbon emissions with regard to our idling laws. We need them in the city of Syracuse. I used to be an assistant attorney general for Governor Cuomo. I focused on the production tax credit in renewable energy with wind energy in our state. I'll continue to be an advocate as your mayor to ensure that renewable energy is a part of the way we move forward, not only on our municipal buildings and our schools, but on the way we encourage our local business owners and landowners to provide property issues for us too. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Howie Hawkins, the Green Party candidate for mayor. I was born and raised in the San Francisco Bay Area, went to Dartmouth College, served in the Marine Corps, and then worked as a carpenter for a couple of decades up in New England, where the second decade I had my own home building business. With the first decade, we did green jobs before we even called them green jobs. Solar, wind, energy efficiency. Had to stop doing that because Reagan pulled the credits away from the high end, and we were tired of just putting fiberglass insulation in the trailers at the low end. I've lived on the South Side since 1991. I came here to work for a nonprofit that was trying to develop cooperatives. It ran out of funding, so for the last 17 years, I've been unloading trucks as a Teamster out at UPS. I think most relevant for mayor is that I've been involved in movements for peace, justice, labor, the environment, independent working class politics since the 1960s, and I think that's given me political skills we'll need to unite Syracuse behind the reforms we need, and to unite with other cities and towns across upstate that share our fiscal distress and our highest in the nation property taxes to get revenue sharing and other reforms from the state. Related to sustainability, I was one of the co-founders of the Clamshell Alliance. No nukes were ordered after that until they did down in Georgia and South Carolina. I went down there with some SNCC veterans to campaign against them a few years ago. I got 15 seconds left. I'll conclude with this. I ran against Governor Cuomo, and he was on the other side or neutral on a lot of issues. He's on my side now, including the ban on fracking. In fact, if you read the Daily News Monday this week, you'd see he was consulting the Green Party about energy policy and climate action. So whoever wins this election, we all got to work together afterwards because we got real problems in this city.
Good afternoon. My name is Ben Walsh. I'm running as the independent candidate for mayor. I've never been affiliated with a political party. I'm running on the Independence and Reform Party lines. I'm born and raised in Syracuse. My wife, Lindsay, and I have owned our home on the city's west side for 11 years. We're raising our two daughters here, 7-year-old daughters in second grade in the city school district, and a 4-year-old who will be in kindergarten next year. We've got a lot invested in the city, and I truly believe the city's best days are ahead of us. Over the course of the past 16 years, I've worked in the public, private, not-for-profit sectors. And I've also, before that, earned my master's in public administration right up the hill at the Maxwell School. And I'm very proud of a number of initiatives that I've been involved in that have helped move our community towards greater sustainability. One of my first jobs in between my undergrad and graduate, I worked for the SUNY Center for Brownfield Studies up at SUNY ESF. We provided guidance to municipalities on, at the time, recently enacted brownfield legislation. During subsequent roles, I advocated aggressively for the New York State Historic Tax Credit during my time at the Metropolitan Development Association up on the top of the State Tower building right outside of here. Also advocated for land bank enabling legislation at the state level. And during my time at the city, I revised the uniform tax exemption policy for SIDA, which allowed us to prioritize mixed-use development, mixed-income development, historic preservation. We actually also created a pilot program for LEED-certified buildings. So a lot of experience there and looking forward to bringing it into the mayor's office. Thank you.
All right. Thank you all for your opening statements. And again, thank you for your participation. We'll rotate through who answers each question first, and I'm just going to start on this end and sort of go right down. So, Ben, let me put this to you and all of you. These first set of questions are about sustainability of the environment. Do you have plans as mayor to implement policies that would address issues such as climate change, land use, or infrastructure protection, especially as it relates to public and environmental health?
Yeah, so I think it's really important, first and foremost, for the mayor to establish a culture in City Hall that is implemented through the department heads into each department, and I'm committed to creating a culture of sustainability and also accountability to make sure that we establish very clear metrics for all of our departments to be held accountable to. Specific areas of interest, during my time at the city, I was involved in the development of the land use plan and currently sit on the advisory committee for the rezone process. I see the opportunity to comprehensively overhaul our zoning code as a real game changer for this city. You know, we tried to, through a series of patchwork improvements, to try to move our zoning code forward, but to be able to comprehensively overhaul it, I think, will help lead our development into the future in a sustainable way. I'm interested in looking at how we invest in our water resources, and also interested in how we can hold up our end of the bargain in reducing carbon emissions throughout the city. Thanks.
Howie?
First of all, I would staff up and strengthen and rename the Department of Planning to be the Department of Planning and Sustainability. We should have real planning. Private developers should bid on our plans rather than what we have now. Private developers willy-nilly are developing the city. They're the de facto planners. I want a public power utility. It's the only way I believe we can go to 100% clean energy. National Grid won't even switch out the lights in the streets to LED. The city asked them. They said, we're not going to do it. The city said, can we buy them? Said, we're not going to sell them. We just need to have our own power utility if we're going to have the power to choose a sustainable path in renewable energy. Land use planning. It's at the municipal level. That's one reason why we need to move to metro government. So we can have effective land use planning, a county land use plan, or a metro-wide land use plan. And within that, each town and city should be able to do the detailed zoning and permitting. I'm not for the consensus governing proposal. I don't have time to say why, but it's a terrible proposal. And finally, I'll just point to this prop that you allowed me to put up there. And that's a plan, not the plan, but a plan for discussion. And that's the kind of thing the city should be doing. And then the developers can work within that framework.
All right. Thanks very much. Juanita?
As your next mayor, I want to make sure that our priority is to reduce the carbon footprint in this city, coordinating with municipality and community efforts. And to demonstrate that, on my team already is Rhea Jaser, someone who's very well known in our community for environmental sustainability, because I don't pretend to be the expert. And a good mayor is not going to do the same thing. They're going to line themselves up with people who know the answers to ensuring that we sustain this city the best that way we can for our families and for our future. So I'm going to move forward with an understanding that we need to ensure that we have experts in City Hall that are helping us move forward to be beneficial to our city. I have been endorsed by the Sierra Club. I have been endorsed by several mayors throughout the region and all of the top five in New York State. What I'm going to focus on is accessible transportation, green spaces in our city, municipal buildings that have solar energy, a geothermal mecca as a manufacturing hub in our city, probably on the south side, and most importantly, ensuring that our schools are safe and havens for teaching renewable energy.
Thanks, Laura.
I believe humans have caused the changes that we're seeing, and I believe humans have the ability to reverse the damage from those changes. On a professional level, in my most recent position as a school superintendent, we were always accustomed to doing five-year facility plans. So you're always looking 5 years out. What are you going to do? And within those plans, you're always being mindful of staying green and doing efforts that are focused on sustainability. Within those plans, so they're even more local, if you will, things that we can be doing more organic at the building level. And, for example, in the school district where I last worked, we had students reusing, recycling, repurposing at the cafeteria. Some people said that it couldn't be done. We couldn't train kindergartners and first graders to separate food from trash from recyclables. Of course it could be done. We brought okra in. We had one of our very committed high school science teachers helping us. The high school students got involved. With the younger students, we were able to make it work. Well, not a lot of time. I don't think we've been asked enough about infrastructure, and it would be nice if we could have a little more time to delve into that topic a little more in detail. Wow, gee. Okay.
You know what? Let's just do that right now. You kind of answered the next question I had in bits and pieces because I realize this is a very broad issue. So let me ask a second follow-up question in this area, and Howie, do you mind starting in this? Where does infrastructure investment fit with sustainability for the city, and how much can the city be a leader in this given the fiscal challenges of any infrastructure project?
Well, public utilities and infrastructure are the public avenues of private commerce, so it's essential to have for a thriving economy. And I've called for public power, public broadband, community broadband, municipalization of the sidewalks so the DPW takes care of the sidewalks like they do the streets. I think that's the first thing we've got to think about. In terms of how we fund it, I mean, that is a political problem. There's plenty of money. And are we going to get to that structural fiscal integrity question?
We definitely have fiscal integrity questions,
I'll save
yes.
my thoughts for that. There is money, for example, for water infrastructure. They appropriated $5 billion for that in the state this year, and there's $1.5 billion for local government water infrastructure, and we should be applying for that, both to deal with the algae problem we may have. We may need filtration so we're not poisoning ourselves with our water. And, of course, the street, the water mains, there's almost one a day that's breaking down. So we need money invested in our water infrastructure.
Great. Juanita,
if
your microphone behaves, we'll allow you to answer this question.
I'll pull it out of it. Listen, we need to be a city that takes some risk. We need to be courageous here. We need to invest in our infrastructure. We should not be doing this alone. The cities, Buffalo and Rochester, have taken the lead. And what do we see? They're creating jobs. Solar energy is now a mecca in Buffalo. They're creating thousands of jobs for people and the infrastructure of their city. We need to be the same type of organization that moves forward. So I am going to work with the partnerships I already have. I've been working for our governor. I've been endorsed by Senator Gillibrand and Senator Schumer. I have many of these relationships around the region. I work closely with Matt Driscoll, who, as we know, is our a former mayor who wants to help this city, too, in his capacity. So we need to invest. And most importantly, we need to ensure that as we move forward and we're talking about investing, we're creating jobs. We're creating jobs for young people. Our neighborhood revitalization will be a priority for me as we move forward, not only sustaining our neighborhoods, but creating jobs in clean energy and giving our kids exposure to opportunities and success, not only in our city, but outside throughout our region and state.
Thank you, Laura.
The Brookings Institute recently ranked Syracuse as 100th out of 100 metropolitan areas our size for economic growth. We've spent millions of dollars in Syracuse on economic growth, and that's where we landed. We also have a problem with lack of planning where infrastructure is concerned. When our infrastructures were built many, many, 100 years ago, nobody was really thinking about long-term planning, but we've certainly known for the last several decades that we have a problem and we didn't plan for it. We should be applying for every dollar available so that we're not always operating on a crisis basis, which is what we do now. When there's a water main break, we're hiring people, overtime costs to come out and deal with the water main breaks in the middle of the night. We're paying premium costs for valves and other parts. We should have been planning for this for the last few decades. We've underinvested. We need a capital assets program where we're utilizing every available dollar to fix our infrastructure. We have wooden pipes, brick pipes, and the added benefit on an economic development side is that we would be creating hundreds of jobs. I've been saying for weeks, I don't think we're talking enough in our race about infrastructure. It needs a lot more attention. Thank you.
All right, thanks. And Ben?
I would point just down the street to the south end of Bank Alley as an example of how I would approach infrastructure as mayor. When we found out that a sewer line had ruptured under Bank Alley, the initial plan was just to go in, as we typically do, dig up the alley and replace the sewer line. I see Russ Houck back there from engineering. Russ was very, very much involved in that project. But we saw it as an opportunity to do something different. At the time, we had some private investment going in on the adjacent buildings. We engaged with the county and talked to them about their green improvement fund and whether or not there was an opportunity to when we rebuilt the road to do it in a way that managed stormwater better. So instead of just digging it up and filling it back in, we replaced the sewer line. We should have replaced the water line. That was the only thing that wasn't done. But when we brought it back up, we made it a much more pedestrian-friendly street. We did replace the street lights. We doubled the amount of street lights and made them LED lights. That area now has not only catalyzed more investment, it's capturing stormwater, and it's a good example of how we can leverage our infrastructure investments to improve the public realm and the surrounding community.
All right, great. Thanks so much. We are now switching to fiscal integrity question. Obviously, structural fiscal integrity is a critical component of sustainability. Juanita, we'll start with you. What plans or ideas do you have to improve the city's fiscal health regarding existing revenues, new revenue ideas, and then balanced with the city's ability to carry out services and programs and investment like we just talked about?
Well, you know, certainly we know that's an issue. And as we move through any topic with regard to how we're going to rebuild our city, we need to talk about creative ways to do that. Our tax incentives, the way we have been pretty much incentivizing industry to be here, has really had no effect of creating jobs, new infrastructure, and any type of green efforts. We need to do that. As we're inviting industry to come here, they need to hold up their part of the bargain and help put people to work, help grow our community. In addition to that, I'd like to see many of our tax-exempt institutions who are doing great things here be more in conversation about how they support the services that they receive. And we should be able to have those conversations, whether it's with SUNY ESF, Syracuse University, or many of our medical institutions. So I want to see those conversations take place. And along those lines, I want to make sure we're thinking creatively. I'm talking about taking the craftsmanship that we have here in manufacturing and focusing on geothermal energy in this city as a mecca to create jobs and to showcase the talent that we have here that produces many of these energy-related initiatives, and make it a place where when you want to talk about this type of energy, you come to Syracuse, New York.
Laura?
We're on the brink of fiscal insolvency. How did we get here? It's a failure of leadership. Our city is in dire straits. Only a little more than half of our properties are on the tax rolls. People are not looking to buy houses in Syracuse. We have a really serious problem. Juanita's talking about having conversations with some of the entities in the city. I don't want to have conversations. I just want to start charging them, for starters. So the people who are not paying taxes should be paying fees. For example, for every linear foot of curb in front of their building, ask them to pay to help with city costs. Part of this question was also about consensus. Do you want us to?
Actually, we'll ask a separate question about that. So,
okay.
You want to wait
so
a
our
second?
Sales tax deal is about to expire. We need to make sure we're still having conversations. We're going to be looking to the county for help with that. We need to turn the city around. We need to improve the schools, and we need public safety. That's what's going to draw people to come to live in Syracuse. That will help generate revenue. I'm not interested in asking people to pay more taxes, commuter tax fees. We need to incentivize people to come live here, not find ways to have them avoid living in Syracuse.
All right, thanks. Ben?
We can't cut our way to prosperity in this community. We've seen what's happened as our road reconstruction budget has shrunk, as our water reconstruction budget has shrunk. We need to generate new revenue. We need to grow our way out of this problem. I've identified a number of opportunities to do that. One, we're talking about properties off the tax rolls. The city owns a lot of properties off the tax rolls, former schools, garages that haven't been well maintained. I want to be much more proactive in getting the surplus of city property back into productive use, and in doing so, generate short-term revenue in the form of sale proceeds and lease proceeds, and long-term revenue in terms of property tax proceeds. We're sitting here downtown. We have a special assessment that all downtown property owners pay. I think it's high time we increase that special assessment to make sure we can deliver services to the city. I think we need to look at our water rates again in order to be able to invest adequately into our water infrastructure. And there's a few folks from Okra here. Another opportunity that is being creative about how we deal with some of our costs. Millings, for example. Okra has found a great use for the city's millings, and I think we can save money by repurposing and redirecting those as opposed to just finding a way to dispose of them. Thanks.
Thanks. Howie?
Well, let's look at the numbers. We have a $15 to $20 million recurring structural deficit. We're going to have $20 to $30 million left in reserves at the end of the current fiscal year. So the second budget the mayor does may be the last mayor. We get a financial control board. They might not only make the budget very austere, they may recommend we dissolve into the county like consensus proposed, where we're left with our still segregated unconsolidated school district as a special debt district paying extra taxes and paying for the pensions and health care of our former city employees. I don't hear solutions from the other candidates. We don't have time to grow the property tax base. $34 million a year, you're not going to increase it by 50% in a year or two. So I'm proposing we got to go to the state with the other local governments around upstate and say you got to increase the revenue sharing. It used to be 8%. Now it's less than one-half of 1%. If we just got it up to 1%, that would be $70 million for the city. That would cover the deficit and enable us to do a lot more. And I've also called for a graduated tax on income made in the city by everybody who makes money here, residents, commuters, absentee landlords. They're coming to the city using police, streets, fire, not paying anything. And that free riding's got to stop. It's only fair. We need a sustainable, fairer, broader tax base.
And now let's put the consensus question on the table. What is the role of ideas from the Consensus Commission specifically, or other ideas like that? How much should proposals like that be followed? And Laura, we'll start with you.
For me, the consensus report was a complete non-starter. And the reason is they ignored the school district. And when Congressman Walsh and the other leaders of that commission were asked why they didn't address the school district, admittedly, they said it's too difficult. It should be scrapped. They need to go back and start again and do what leaders do, which is tackle the difficult issues. Now, if you're asking me what if there was anything in the commission that I report that I like, yes, I've said that we should merge SIDA with OSIDA. We should have 50% representation from the city, 50% representation from the county. The county executive should name a facilitator who doesn't have voting rights. But I wouldn't favor it unless we have ethics reform in city and county government, which would include banning pay-to-play. But the consensus report, it's a non-starter. Nobody wants to deal with our schools. We need somebody to step up and talk about public safety and the schools. I will focus on that until the last minute. Those are our issues. The consensus report ignored them. Unconscionable, like it's indefensible to me that they did not take a look at the number one issue people talk to me about when I knock on doors. What are you going to do about the schools?
Thank you. Ben?
The consensus report contains 50 recommendations. One of those is to consolidate the city and county governments. I do not support that recommendation. There are 49 other recommendations, many of which I would suggest we should not scrap, that we should look real hard at. This is, People have referred to it as low-hanging fruit. This fruit's been hanging there for a long time. It's about time that we roll up our sleeves and where it makes sense and where it's in the best interest of the city of Syracuse, which is the only test that I will apply when I'm looking at these recommendations and move forward with them. Laura mentioned economic development. I was obviously directly a part of that during my time at the city, and I agree that there should not be two competing industrial development agencies in Onondaga County that are essentially creating a race to the bottom where the only winners are those that are pitting the two against each other. I think that there are opportunities to be more efficient with public works, so our plows can stop doing U-turns at municipal boundaries and be more efficient in how they provide their services. I think we need to look real hard at water. I think what Aqua and the Metropolitan Water Board did not only saved money but increased services. I think we need to look real hard at the city's water department and how they might be able to benefit from a partnership with Aqua as well. Thanks.
Thanks. Howie?
Well, I want to pursue metropolitan government. We're one social and economic unit in the metro region. It's the only way we can desegregate our schools and housing. And we're talking about concentrated poverty. That's the same thing as segregated poverty. As I mentioned, it's the only way we can have effective land use planning that's enforceable because that's vested at the municipal level. And I think also if we're going to have shared services, we've got to have effective and responsive government, because if we keep the winner-take-all single-member district system of electing our county or metro officials, which is what the consensus proposes, just like the county legislature, city interests will get steamrolled as they are in the county legislature now. So I think we should look at some of those shared services. The property tax sharing plan is good. Water consolidation would help with our infrastructure. The IDAs are obvious because now the developers are playing one off against the other and the city's losing out. But if we're going to have effective metro government, it's got to be based on a system of proportional representation in the legislature so all interests are fairly represented and the city doesn't get steamrolled. And we need a federal model where the cities and towns retain powers. They're sub-jurisdictions of the metro municipality. So, for example, the land use plan, within that, the towns and cities should do the detailed planning and zoning and permitting.
Thanks a lot. I know these are big areas that it's tough to answer in a minute, but thank you. Juanita?
Yeah. No, I think the consensus plan was commendable, and I appreciate that people came together to talk about consolidation of services. But like my fellow colleagues up here, if the plan had just presented the 49 recommendations without the merger of county and city government, I think it'd be a different conversation right now, and perhaps we would have already moved into the phase of some of these recommendations that are certainly helpful to the city and the county. But first, the city should be standing up with a plan. The city should be talking about how it benefits its citizens. And I'd like to offer in the next phase, that's what we will see. As your mayor, I will stand up with a consolidation plan that benefits our city. Second, the merger of county and city government, while none of us support it, we need to talk about it. It's a concern. The very issues we're talking about today, sustainability and having a healthy city, these come from democratic initiatives, different than what our county entities are talking about. We need to preserve our city. It's an organic component of everything that we do in ensuring that the people of the city, the most vulnerable, are taken care of. So I'll continue to say that I would never be someone who supports a merger of county-city government. And quickly, I do support the ideas of bringing the particular OSIDA and SIDA entities together, talking about our parks, talking about the tax base, revenue sharing. Those are great ideas. Would never support the merger of city and county government.
All right, great. Thank you so much. Moving on, there's many Syracuse residents struggle to survive under the weight of poverty and its symptoms. Obviously, the issue's gotten a lot of attention recently. We're not going to solve this in a one-minute answer, but what approaches to address poor housing and its affordability, as well as improving people's ability to participate in the economy through more and better jobs, would you support? And Ben, we're starting with you on this one.
So starting with housing, we know we have issues around concentrated poverty in our neighborhoods. We know we have issues around segregation in our neighborhoods among a number of different lines. We need to be intentional in our housing policy to deconcentrate the poverty. We need to figure out ways to incentivize more mixed-income housing, more affordable rental housing, especially in areas like downtown where you have primarily market rate. To make those neighborhoods more inclusive. And we also need to make sure when we're looking at placing primarily affordable housing that we're not just going to the neighborhoods where there's the least amount of resistance and further concentrating our poverty. We also need to look at the barriers that many of our residents are dealing with within our neighborhoods that associated with health and sustainability. We have to tackle the lead crisis and all the other home health hazards that are hurting our community. Another area that I'm passionate about is ensuring that all of our residents have access to healthy and affordable food. I think those are all areas where we can begin to deal with the root issues associated with poverty and put people in a better position to seek opportunity going forward. Thanks.
Howie?
Well, a strategic vision of my administration would be to focus city resources and policies on uplifting poor and working class people. And as we get them out of poverty, then the problems that come from high concentrated poverty, crime, and struggling schools will be reduced, and the city will be attractive to middle class people and businesses. Specifically, I've called for a Marshall Plan for Syracuse, and that could come from state funding and upstate revitalization initiatives, and it would focus on putting money into the high poverty communities, particularly rebuilding affordable housing, creates jobs. We got to stop this trickle-down, top-down approach to economic development, like Conjure not paying taxes till 2035. It was supposed to redevelop the north side. Our high poverty census tracts have quadrupled since 2000, and most of them are on the north side. That just has not worked. It don't trickle down to the neighborhoods or out to the neighborhoods. I want not just incentives, but a mandatory inclusionary zoning ordinance, so we get mixed income housing in all areas of the city with minimum requirements for both affordable housing and also upscale housing or market rate housing. And finally, to build that affordable housing, I want public development of housing. The private developers aren't doing it enough, and we have an affordability crisis. Syracuse Housing has done that using the low-income tax credits that private developers have used with Freedom Commons, the Leonard Apartments on the west side, and I think we got to scale that up.
Great. Juanita?
I talk about this issue rather passionately. I myself grew up in poverty, and I think why we had such a decisive primary is that my story resonates with the people of the city of Syracuse. I've been in many neighborhoods where people don't bother to knock because those folks don't vote, but they don't vote because they're not engaged. So I've been out there talking to people and asking them about their communities and how we start to change neighborhoods and opportunities by listening to the very people out there. What did I hear? We have a deplorable water shutoff policy. When you live in poverty, this city has to care for you. And we turn water off when landlords don't pay their bills, but renters do. And these are kids, families, the elderly, disabled. We have to care if we're going to focus on poverty. I want to talk about beefing up codes enforcement. Our lead infestation, rodent infestation, the squalor that our families are living in, we need to look to Rochester, who's dealing with this issue effectively by beefing up codes and getting into our one- and two-unit buildings to ensure that we hold landlords accountable. And we've got to get on top of these housing cases that are sitting there, many as 800, just waiting for enforcement. We have to care about people and make it a priority.
Thank you. Laura?
Ben Walsh once described me as the doom and gloom candidate. It's because I like to look at data, and I like to look at research, and I don't engage in happy talk. So let's just quickly look at some data. The Census Bureau recently revealed that Syracuse went from being the 29th most impoverished city in the country to the 13th most impoverished city in the country. The national poverty rate went down to 12%. Syracuse's went up from 31 to 32%. We have the highest concentration of poverty among blacks and Hispanics of any city our size. How did this happen? We're on the wrong track. If we keep doing what we've always been doing, which is defending the status quo and maintaining the status quo, we're going to be number one for poverty in Syracuse. You have to look at poverty in connection with jobs, the school situation. We have a 60% graduation rate. 300 teachers report being assaulted. Judge Wilson affirms in a recent legal decision that Syracuse City School District students have been deprived of a sound basic education. And at City Hall, we have job-crushing fees and bureaucratic red tape, which make it such a test for people to see if they want to start and grow businesses here. And we're not doing a good enough job of helping them and connecting potential employees to the jobs that are available. These are triangulated topics. This is what I'll be dealing with if I'm elected mayor on day one. Thank you.
And can I ask a question in the poverty realm regarding economic benefit? You know, how can we have people in poverty gain something in the economic realm and, you know, participate in the economy to then start to do just what you're we're talking about and help themselves to climb out a little bit and reverse some of those statistics? Howie, we'll start with you.
Well, the city creates thousands of jobs by its own funding, city-funded jobs, in the departments and on contracts. And when the Human Rights Commission used to report what the Equal Employment Opportunity Program since 1973 by ordinance requires, minority hiring, they found that if you look at that data, minorities were getting one-fifth of their proportionate share of jobs on city contracts. And there are no requirements for city departments. There was some kind of agreement with labor, but except for the fire and police, which had that 1980 consent decree. We're 37 years later, and the police department has just reached 10% minority officers. This city has a terrible record in that regard, and I would overhaul the Equal Employment Opportunity Program and start with making sure our residents and our minorities are getting their fair share of city-funded jobs. And then the kind of economic development I talked about would be targeted to the high-poverty neighborhoods, and we'll build from the bottom up rather than trickle-down economics, which, you know, besides Destiny was probably the Richard Florida creative class thing. I think that's why we got all these high-end condos, why they closed the Benderson Senior Center, why the bus station was moved out, and that hasn't trickled out to the neighborhood. So I'm for a bottom-up approach, and you put the resources directly into the high-poverty neighborhoods.
Juanita?
I'd like to focus on specific efforts that help sustain our neighborhoods and create jobs. So when I talk about solar energy, what we need to do is be the example city. First of all, ensure that all of our city buildings use some type of renewable energy, solar energy. And we have thousands of people in our community that cannot afford to pay their national grid bills. Why aren't we incentivizing landlords and those who own buildings in our city to focus on solar energy? Think about the jobs that we could create and exposure to young people on opportunity and rebuild our neighborhoods at the same time. And last, what I think is really important is that we teach our communities how they can sustain themselves. I'd like to see some more urban gardens in our communities. I know that we've started some new organizations in more recent time, but this is something that can change an entire street. We see them being grown in front yards. We see them being cooperative gardens. This is something that we need to focus on so we can expose those who need good food and nutrition to the ability to gain it themselves.
Laura?
There are different types of poverty. There's generational poverty and there's situational specific poverty. There's research to show that if you're in your third or beyond generation of poverty, your chances of getting out of it are very slim, as opposed to someone who might lose a job, be evicted, and has this very situation-specific poverty. So those two types of families have two different types of needs. But everybody needs jobs. And again, to point to what we do here, there's an example that I will cite of a gentleman who has a business on Westcott Street. He said, "All I wanted to do was come over to the other side of the street for my restaurant. I sold fish over there. I wanted to come to this side of the street to sell falafel." It took him 2 years to get situated from City Hall. And what happened to him in the meantime is he had oral permission to move the business. But then he got a letter saying he owed a $100 per day fee going back for 2 years because he operated without written permission. Who does that? Why are we treating people like this? We need to do a better job. We also have jobs that are existing now. We have manufacturing jobs in Syracuse and Central New York that are going unfilled because the people who want to work don't always have the right skills for those jobs. So not only do we have to do a better job of helping people start and grow their businesses, we have to do a much better job of connecting people to the jobs that are already existing and are going unfilled.
All right, thanks a lot. Ben?
Yeah, I'm going to pick right up where Laura left off. You know, one of the most frustrating things that happened during my time at the city working in economic development is within hours of each other, I'd have a meeting with a business that would say we have 50 jobs that we can't find people to fill, and then later that day, I'm at a meeting with a number of people that are saying we've been looking for a year and we can't find jobs. There is an inherent misalignment often with the jobs that are available and the skills of those looking for those jobs. There are some great dual client models out there that we've begun to employ. I think we need to focus more on them, where we're bringing in the prospective employers with the prospective employees and making sure that we're aligning those skills for the jobs that are actually available. I've also talked a lot recently about jobs for our young people. We have a few different summer jobs programs, but CNY Works, which employs 475 kids every summer, receives about 2,000 applications. So there are significant opportunities to put more young people to work, and I've rallied a number of local businesses that are prepared to hire those young people with the right resources. So those are just a couple areas where I think we could do more, and look forward to doing it as mayor. Thank you.
Great. Howie, did we start with you on this question? I've lost my place, or I think we did.
You started me with the second round. I can't remember
the
first round.
No, we did. We did. Okay. Lost track because I skipped a question in there. Anyway, we're moving over to education and schools, critical for sustaining growth of the area. Syracuse's future belongs to our youth. Now, it's not enough to say you're the candidate to say he or she is for better schools. What is that as opposed to the candidates who are for worse schools? So needless to say,
I'm going to do that.
So what role can the mayor play in public education and its improvement?
I believe the mayor is it me?
Yeah.
Okay. I believe the mayor can play a huge role, and it's about influencing resources through partnerships. So I do use the advantage of me working for our governor, working very close with our county executive, and being your corporation counsel, that we have the way to create partnerships to ensure that we're getting the resources that we need. I have a daughter who's an eighth grade teacher in our city schools, and I hear about it every day, that we have a system that is trying so hard with the revenue that we have to make a difference in the lives of young people, but they're living in poverty, 70% of them. And so we need to have a mayor that influences resources to supplement what's already there. I envision a mayor that has a dashboard of all of our schools and those kids that are falling between the cracks because of what they have to go home to each day. We need to care about our kids. So I want to be a mayor that not only gets resources, but talks about career pathways, opportunities, incentivizes young people to stay in school. We need to be focusing on our public servant opportunities, growing police officers, firemen, teachers, public servants that will stay in this community because this is where they're from, and guaranteeing them an opportunity on the other end so they don't drop out. So a mayor can do quite a bit.
Laura?
How long do I have? A minute? 7 years ago, former Mayor Tom Young, who's a Democrat, urged Mayor Minor to seek mayoral control of the school district. It didn't happen. There were three schools on the worst performing list at the time. We now have 9 schools under receivership. We have a 60% graduation rate. 40% of our students are graduating late or they're dropping out altogether. Some of the ones who do graduate with their cohort don't have adequate post-secondary plans. Now, Ben will tell you that we should be celebrating the fact that ITC has a 90% graduation rate. Yes, it's a selective school, so the people who go there are self-selected by nature, so they're likely to have a higher graduation rate. Judge Wilson affirmed in a decision our students have been deprived of a sound basic education. We need bold action. We need mayoral responsibility of the schools, whereby with the advice and consent, permission, participation of the common council, the mayor appoints the school board members. They are the key governing body for the school district, and I'm going to bet there isn't one person in this room who can name all 7 of your school board members, and they are the most important body for the school district. We need a mayor who steps up and says, the buck will stop with me on the schools. And if I do this and I don't turn it around in 4 years, you don't have to worry about voting for me again. I won't run again.
All right. Thank you, Laura. Ben?
I don't know if anybody's aware, but the graduation rate at Syracuse ITC is 90%. I say that because we don't hear the good news enough about our city school district. We know that there are serious challenges. We know that most of those are associated with the crippling poverty that our community faces. There's a direct correlation between poverty and academic achievement. So while there are many challenges we still need to face, we do need to celebrate our successes. I have some more good news. I heard recently that the state test scores for ELA in the city school district have recently come in, and they're outpacing Rochester and Buffalo. Well, we've closed our racial achievement gap in our high schools. Our graduation rate, while nowhere near where it needs to be, is going in the right direction. So there are positive things happening. As a parent of a child in the city school district, I have a very much a vested interest in it. And as mayor, I think through both the budgeting process and through the Joint Schools Construction Board, there's an opportunity to support all of those things that I just mentioned that are working, including our CTE programs as well, and also change direction when things aren't working and being open and realistic about that, and discipline being one that continues to be a challenge in our school district. Thank you.
Thanks, Ben. Howie?
Well, I think the mayor can be a political leader in terms of school policy. Martin Luther King came here in 1965 and warned Syracuse, we're getting rid of Jim Crow segregation in the South. You got de facto segregation up here, and if you don't deal with it, you're going to lose generations of children. 50 years later, that's what happened. We got to deal with the question of segregation between city, where you have high concentrated poverty, and the adjacent school districts. Where we've had desegregation, if you read Gerald Grant's book comparing Raleigh, Wake County to Syracuse, they integrate by economic class, and the lower class kids' scores come up, the middle class kids do as well or better, and they all do better on really important things for life and work and business, like intellectual self-confidence, leadership skills, creativity, problem solving, teamwork. And so we can go to the adjacent school districts that are affluent and say, we can create better schools for all our kids if we desegregate. And we got to address that issue. The other thing I would address is the test, punish, and privatize agenda, where they define poor schools as bad and their teachers as bad because the poor kids score low on tests. Duh, we already knew that. And then they privatize them. 9 of 34 city schools are up for state takeover and probably hand over to charters, and it'd be a disaster for the school district. So we got to defend our schools.
All right, thanks so much. I want to kind of move over to some of the audience questions that were submitted, and conveniently enough, one addresses the next question I was going to ask anyway. So you, whoever wrote that, wins the first question from the audience. The question is, how can you tangibly engage local residents from diverse neighborhoods in city policy and planning? As sustainability takes into account environmental protection, we also want it to have a sharing of economic and development benefits. So I think we're going to start with Laura on this one.
Can you repeat the question, please?
So how can you engage local residents from diverse neighborhoods in policies and planning?
The way probably all four of us have been doing this for the last few months, which is to listen to people, knock on doors. And there's a way of listening, and it's a strategy. You just write down what people say. You take down all of these notes. And then over a period of time, you code your data. And you look for the recurring themes. And from those recurring themes, you establish a strategic plan. And from the strategic plan, you look to who the leaders are, who are the opinion leaders in your community. And you bring those people together and say, here are the themes. Here's what we heard. Here's the strategic plan. What are our goals? What are the benchmarks that we have to establish so that we can be accountable for accomplishing this goal? And how are we going to be transparent to our constituents in terms of how we're reaching the strategic plan? So it's just it sounds a little Pollyanna, but it's pretty simple. You have to take into account what everybody's saying. We have needs that are universal across the city, but we also have unique needs from neighborhood to neighborhood. Those can all be addressed in a very simple strategic plan that you report out in a very transparent way, and you hold everybody accountable.
Great. Ben?
So first and foremost, we have to go to the residents. I think oftentimes we schedule a public meeting, we put a notice in the paper on a cork board, and we just expect people to show up. That's not how you do citizen engagement. We need to be in the neighborhoods. We need to hold public meetings in different communities at different times. We need to make our public meetings more accessible using technology. The fact that we don't live stream our Common Council meetings and our IDA meetings at this point is it's as easy as just having somebody hold up a phone and hit Facebook Live. So there's so much more we could be doing, again, both with technology and also going to where people are. One specific proposal that I've included in my platform is creating a quality of life commission that will actually bring together residents with business owners, city department heads to prioritize specific neighborhood issues. And I think more than anything, in my experience with community engagement, we have to actually follow through on what are raised at meetings. I can't tell you how many meetings I've gone to where the same issues are brought up time and time again. An issue gets brought up, you address that issue and move on to the next one. I'd hate to oversimplify, but sometimes that's all it takes to get people to actually believe in the process.
Howie?
I think we better engage ordinary citizens in the political process and public activities by institutionalizing their participation and power. I want to bring back TNT from its exile into a nonprofit and uncertain funding back into this process of city governance and build them as neighborhood assemblies around the real neighborhoods people have named and can identify with. And so the sectors are too big. There are several neighborhoods, most of them. And they would participate in neighborhood-directed planning and participatory budgeting of a allocation from the city budget for their own community improvements and projects and social and cultural and educational activities. With real power and money at stake, people would come to the meetings, I think. I've lived in New England. I've seen town meeting. I understand the political culture there compared to here. In New England, when there's a problem, people say, what are we going to do about it? In 15 signatures, you put it on a warrant, and you get it before town meeting, and people talk it through and come to a solution. Here, people say, if they participate at all, what are you going to do? And a lot of people say, I got enough problems. It's painful to watch the politicians. I'm checking out. So I think we need to institutionalize people's participation and their power in the whole process.
Thank you. Juanita?
Well, I'm the only candidate that after knocking on a couple of thousand doors, I realized I was creating a journal of what the people of the city of Syracuse are talking about. So I created What the Next Mayor Does, the first 100 days in office. And there's a whole page on what we do in our neighborhoods, not written by me, but written from the very voices of people that want to be listened to, that they want a voice that we actually respond to. And Ben's right. We haven't been listening. We haven't been responding. So what did I hear? We need accessible transportation. You can't get to work if you can't afford to get on a bus, or you have to get to a place outside the city of Syracuse. I'm talking about bringing OnTrack back. We need to do that during this 81 project, and we need to do it to make a city that's desirable to be in and where people who live in the city to get to the places that they need to be in. They talk to me about parks. We're the only city in upstate New York where property values are down around our parks. We need playgrounds. We need picnic tables. We need the ability of people in our most vulnerable neighborhoods to have a place to go. And last I'll offer to you, what I heard was we need jobs. We need to be creative about the way we focus on jobs. The land bank, its intentions was to create a neighborhood where people had say in what their neighborhood was, how it was rebuilt, and how we create jobs, and we haven't done that. Missed opportunity with the land bank. I'll make sure we're listening to people and going right into neighborhoods when we decide what to do with our blighted housing.
All right, where you conveniently hinted at the next question from the audience dealing with Interstate 81, when I-81 comes down and the community grid is being built, or whatever option. How will you make sure that all Syracusans benefit, not just the developers? Ben, we'll start with you.
Well, I'm glad you started with the community grid, because I think for most of us that have been paying attention and live in Syracuse, the community grid option is the only option, and it's one that I've been advocating aggressively for and will continue to. I think it presents us with some significant opportunities in this community, obviously to put more property on the tax rolls, to begin to weave together the urban fabric that was broken apart when the elevated viaduct was built, not only to continue to leverage the investment that we've seen in our urban core in downtown and University Hill, but to make sure that investment continues onto the south side, onto the north side. It'll give us an opportunity to develop new neighborhoods, mixed-income neighborhoods, where everyone does benefit. To the extent that we are able, we need to see it as a workforce development opportunity. And I do think that there is an opportunity to rethink how people get around this community. I would suggest, based on SMTC's work, that bus rapid transit is the more logical next step for public transportation in this community. And that's something that I would be interested in pursuing. But, yeah, community grid all the way.
How
Well, I was for the community grid before we called it the community grid. This plan was actually drafted in 2005, and when I ran for mayor that year, I said, take down the elevated highway. You can come up and look later. We can talk about it. I think for the city to get the most out of it, they got to maximize their leverage. We got to insist on the land under the elevated highway being deeded to the city, so we got control over that land and can control development there. We got to go to the Department of Labor and say no project labor agreement unless our people are guaranteed some of those jobs. And then Syracuse Housing Authority has already got plans in the works for the 27-block area. They control south of Adams when this project goes, and they're going to double or triple the density with enough for all the low-income people there now to stay there, but also bring in middle and upper-income people. So we got professors and teachers and police and fire and so forth living with people who are now low-income. And we got to be concerned that we do the same kind of development north of Adams. That's why it's so important to get that right away under the elevated highway.
Thanks, Juanita.
When I first was asked this question well over a year ago, I talked about whatever the design is, it has to be the one that rebuilds our urban core. It has to be. And in the research, I too came to the conclusion that the street scenario or the grid is the best way to go. And as my colleagues have said, that's where we'll see a viaduct that comes down, stops separating our city, makes it more walkable, appealable, and the ability to start creating a new core that will grow with the thinking of a grid. Why is that? Because we won't have a city that's focused on transportation or a highway that's focused on rush hour. What we'll have is a city that for 24/7, 7 days a week, we will have a city that you can come in and out seven different ways, and you will see economic development along all of these corridors. You'll put people to work. We'll start to have mixed-use living. We'll start to have opportunity for industry, and we'll start to see a city that looks very different because I'm going to go with OnTrack, and I'm going to make sure that we have a transportation system, too, that is in construction along with this highway, and we really see a whole new city for all people in our city.
Thanks, Laura.
This will be a city-defining project. There is an independent study, the results of which have not yet been reported out. They were due at the end of summer. They're not here yet. I want to see the results of that study. This is a decades-long decision for our community, and I don't want to enter into it without having all of the available information. It's the job of the leader is to make sure that you're making as informed a decision as possible. Initially, I've said that I would support something along the lines of a hybrid community grid with a tunnel or community grid with a depressed highway, but I'm not willing to make a commitment yet until I see the results of that study. Your question was, how do we make sure the work goes around without making wealthy developers more wealthy? That points to ethics reform, and I've said if I'm elected mayor, I will be seeking a ban on pay-to-play. People who are running for office would not be allowed for 2 years to take donations from developers or their principals, and similarly, the developers and the principals would not be able to contribute to a campaign for 2 years. I got married at Hotel Syracuse. I'm thrilled that it's revitalized, but Ed Riley is now wealthy, and we have a higher poverty rate than we ever had. We need a ban on pay-to-play. This is ethics reform. This is good city government. This is what people in New York State are looking for. They want ethics reform, and banning pay-to-play is the place to start.
All right. One other 81-related question I just want to stay with. What are the environmental justice impacts of replacing 81, during all the construction, given the various alternatives that might happen? Howie, we'll start with you. Or what are your, what are your environmental concerns? What are the impacts?
Well, what happens to the people in public housing? They're the closest living to it, and I think, as I said earlier, Syracuse Housing Authority, I think, has done a good job with they've got a four-stage planning process. They just finished stage two, and they're looking out for their people. So I think the next mayor's got to make sure they've got support in that project. And the other thing I think is, in terms of justice, is that we've got to make sure our people are getting their fair share of those jobs, and that means going to the state DOT and telling them, we're not signing off on a PLA, and they shouldn't. That doesn't include some guarantees. And that is going to be a fight because Donald Trump has said there are going to be no more, you know, geographic guarantees for jobs on any federal funding. That money's federal coming through the state. But I think we got to fight for it, and that's a justice fight that we got to win.
Juanita?
Well, certainly we know that 81 has caused a number of issues along those who live in public housing. We have a lot of kids suffering from asthma. We have a lot of kids that have mental issues, and some would say that while there are a number of factors that are the makeup of this in our children, Highway 81 has been one of those components. And when it comes down, it is the opportunity of a lifetime for de-densifying concentrations of poverty, for green spaces, for ensuring we have opportunity for housing that's not just low income, but affordable and marketable housing. And, you know, I see a place, again, that's walkable, that creates opportunity for job creation. And I'll keep saying it, but transportation will be a huge part of this. And so we can now start focusing on reducing carbon emissions by talking about transportation as a system, not buses, but systems like an Amtrak, a light rail transportation system that other cities are taking advantage of to deal with some of their carbon issues. We can do that here. The track is here. We just need to have the courage to leverage the project itself and start to create a system that begins a green city.
Laura?
Chris, I think your question focused on environmental impact.
Yeah, environmental and environmental justice impacts of replacing 81.
Okay. Obviously, the elevated viaduct has had a devastating effect on our city. But as far as environmental impact, I don't know. That's why I want to see what the results of the study are. This is so complicated. I mean, I'm told that there are machines at Upstate that are so sensitive that vibration from nearby streets can disrupt their operation. These are things that I don't know about. So I have to rely on the experts, and that's what I want to do when I see the results of that study. But I also want to see a place where people aren't taking their lives in their hands, trying to walk from, you know, where the hospitals are over to, you know, just a block away. We obviously need to take care of that. That's public safety. But I do want to see the impact environmental statement and the rest of the study that's being done.
Ben?
Yeah, I called on the state probably about a month ago now to release the draft environmental impact statement and the tunnel study, which both were supposed to be done before the end of the year. As far as the tunnel study, there are going to be no surprises in there. The Department of Transportation has done all of this work already, and those of us that have been paying attention have reviewed it and know that the tunnel is not the best option for us. Among other things, there will be venting towers that would have to come up from the tunnel, venting all of the all of the bad air coming out of there. So this is an opportunity to undo one of the most significant environmental and social injustices in this city's history. The community grid results in less property demolitions, less relocations of residents and businesses, and gives us an opportunity to build new, sustainable, mixed-income, mixed-use, walkable neighborhoods. That's what I'm looking forward to focusing on as mayor.
All right, great. I really have time for one question, so I'm going to kind of put three questions together, so I apologize in advance. But we talked about poverty, and certainly an impact on poverty in a lot of ways is substance abuse. From the mayor's office, what can you do about substance abuse and more particularly the impact the opioid and other addiction issues are having on the city? So I'm sorry if that sounds like a cobbled-together question, because it was.
Whose turn is it?
But what, as a mayor, can you do? And Juanita, you're up.
Well, it's something I've already been doing. As the Upstate Regional Director for Department of Labor, I had the opportunity to bring people together when we started talking about job creation and a crisis unit for beds in our city. They just cut the ribbon the other day to begin groundwork, but what I was hearing as we were talking about creating jobs is there was this opportunity to create a facility here to deal with this issue. There's no doubt that this is a priority for our next mayor. Our president has just announced that it's a national epidemic, and we need to be a city that gets right into the trenches and starts supporting those organizations such as ARC, FACES, and SBH, who are trying to deal with this in a dignified way. People on addiction need our support. We need to have a marketing campaign that people understand these are real lives that we need to focus on. And as a city, I want to make sure that I set the example for that. And we're caring for people and those who need opportunities but don't have access to resources, that we find them, which is why I'll support working with all of these organizations to do that.
Thanks. Laura?
There was a period of time when the opioid crisis was becoming more discussed that there was, I think, a tendency to blame physicians for overprescribing. Thankfully, we've moved away from that. I don't think any physician would ever choose to create someone who's addicted. They just want to make people be pain-free. So I think the first thing we have to do is stop pointing fingers and blaming people. Secondly, we have to destigmatize the impact of addiction and the effect of it so that people will be willing to come forward, admit that they have a problem, and be willing to seek out support and help from our agencies. We also need to do a better job of connecting people to the various agencies. We're really lucky. We have a lot of agencies here in Central New York who want to work on this problem. I'm told from some people that there's actually a little bit of competition among those agencies. So we have to make sure that everybody's collaborating so that if there's a specific niche service that one agency delivers, that we're matching up the people in need with those particular agencies. And obviously, really need to be mindful of the impact of this on children. We know there are people in Syracuse who are selling their food stamps to get drugs, which means that their children are going, their family members are going hungry. So this is a terrible, terrible situation impacting everybody in our community. And I think these are the steps to start to go along and to try to remediate that and ameliorate the effects of addiction on the effect it's having on everybody.
Thanks. Ben?
The opioid addiction epidemic that we have, the synthetic drug epidemic that we have, it's a health crisis in the community. I think all too often people look at it from a criminal perspective, and one way in which we can control that, I can control that hopefully as the next mayor, is in helping to educate and work with our police department to make sure that we're not treating this as a crime issue. Those that are addicted need help. They need health care. Oftentimes they need mental health care. You know, I think probably all of us in this room have been touched in some way by the opioid epidemic. I had a friend that I grew up with that passed away from an overdose. I have another friend who is living as an addict right now. They need help. I appreciate Laura bringing up the stigma issue. We have to destigmatize this issue. And we have to be open to progressive approaches in dealing with it. It wasn't too long ago when we were debating whether or not needle exchanges were a good idea. We have to get over our own stigmas and look at what works and take some risks and do whatever is necessary, because we can't afford anything other than that.
Howie?
Well, the first thing to do is do what we can to stop the overdose deaths, because there's too many. More people died last year than the whole war in Vietnam in terms of U.S. Service people. I think we got to decriminalize possession and use and treat this as a medical, not a criminal problem. We should have a safe site for injection with medical services available so people aren't taking this fentanyl or whatever it's called. It's killing them. I think we need to get to all the ERs, what they're doing at Upstate, where they treat the drug addiction with a drug called Suboxone, I think it's called, so they don't get the withdrawal symptoms right away and go, as soon as the crisis is over and they get out of the ER, they're out back in the street trying to find their next fix. What we need to have is drug treatment on demand, and we are one vote away in the New York State Senate for passage, which already passed the Assembly, the New York Health Act, a single-payer public health plan that would provide all medically necessary services to all New Yorkers, including drug treatment. And we should be pushing for that. Not only would it get people into drug treatment, it would save the city $80 million in terms of what it's now paying for health care. And I'm out of time, or I'd break that down for you.
All right, thanks. I think we're done, right? We started with you. lose track a little bit. So that's all the time we have. We're going to go to closing statements. I want to thank you for your time. The other questions that were submitted, I'll make sure they get to the candidates, and then WAER will post online just written responses to some of those questions. So let me give you guys an opportunity to have closing statements. Just by luck of the draw, Laura, we'll start with you.
Okay, thank you. I am the Republican candidate for the office of mayor. Coming into this, I knew that it would be an uphill battle being a Republican in a nearly 4-to-1 Democrat city. But I believe that if you take the time to listen to what my priorities and my platforms are, it shapes people's opinions of what kind of a leader I would be. I have executive leadership ability. I know how to do this job. The learning curve is going to be there for any one of us. Each one of us going in, if elected, is going to have to take some time to learn. But I know how to run an organization. I know how to collaborate with people. I know how to size things up. I know how to create a plan and execute the plan. House Speaker Tip O'Neill once said that all politics is local politics. And Mayor LaGuardia once said that when it comes to cleaning the streets, nobody cares if you're a Republican or a Democrat. The city of Syracuse is in a state of decline. We can't afford 4 more years of this. We need a turnaround. I will lead a turnaround. I hope to have your vote. Even if I don't, please vote for somebody on November 7th. Thank you.
Ben.
Thank you. So just to recap, I'm running as the independent candidate for mayor. I'm on the independence and reform line. So come November 7th, I'd be honored to have your vote. My most recent position at the city was as the city's economic development director, and I think one of the most significant stands that we took was saying openly and proudly that not all development is good development, and that we as a community need to hold those that are doing business in our community and those that are investing in our community to a high standard. And I think it's just as important that we hold ourselves to that same high standard. I pride myself on someone that provides excellent service. I am a public servant. I aspire to public service. I've done it for the past 16 years in a number of capacities, both in a volunteer and professional capacity, and I aspire to do it as your mayor. I want to be the type of mayor, and I want Syracuse to be the type of city that is open to new ideas. As you've heard, we know that change is needed. We need to take risks. They need to be calculated risks, but we need to take risks. We need to be open to big ideas. And I want, after having spent 6 years in City Hall, there were too many times when the answer to those proposing big ideas or new ideas was no, or this is how we've always done it. I want to change that culture. I want to establish a culture of sustainability, of accountability, and of innovation. I truly believe our city's best days are ahead of us, and I hope that you'll consider voting for me for mayor. Thank you.
Thanks, Howie.
Well, we've touched on the problems of the city: poverty, struggling schools, crime, and our fiscal crisis. And I've adopted as my slogan, real solutions can't wait. And I've tried to offer real solutions: progressive tax reforms, targeting city resources and policies to uplift and poor and working class people, desegregating our schools and our housing to deconcentrate and reduce poverty, public power, broadband, and sidewalks. And we didn't get much time to talk about it, but I think we need bold urban design initiatives so we're not everywhere USA, just like every other Rust Belt city. Why would anybody want to come here rather than Utica or Binghamton or Rochester? We got some unique qualities. I'd like to see the Erie Canal come back through that beautiful architecture. I'd like to restore Onondaga Creek, an eco-industrial corridor along the canal and an agricultural corridor with our own businesses supplying our own needs in a sustainable way. So you've all seen the polls. I'm behind. I would say don't vote strategically. Look at the problems we face. Look at the solutions that we're offering and vote for the best candidate. Even if your candidate doesn't win, you've told the candidate who did win what you want. If you vote strategically and settle for second best, you're settling for second best. So I hope you conclude when you do that study that I'm the best candidate and you'll give me your vote. Thank you.
Juanita?
I can appreciate what my colleagues tell you they want to do, but at the end of the day, it's not what we want. It's about what the people of the city of Syracuse want, and that we listen to them and we stop with the top-down approaches. And that's why I'm in this race, because I know what service is. I've served my country, I've served our state, and I've served our city. And what it's about is an effort that is about bringing about what people want. And I can tell you what they want. We know when it comes to sustaining this city and having an environmentally healthy place to live, we have to focus on deer management and Lyme disease. That's what we're hearing. We need to focus on this land bank that is not creating the opportunities as it was meant to, and we have 1,800 blighted houses that are infested with all kinds of issues. That's what I'm listening to. I'm hearing that we need to put people to work, young people, create pathways. And we need to make sure that we do that by incentivizing industry, not that we just sell the market to, but that they actually create those jobs and they actually focus on the very people that live in this city. And we also are hearing that the people in the city want to be heard. They want to be heard and be engaged in city life and city government. They want green spaces. They want walkways. They want access to the same opportunity just a few folks have in this city. I want to be that voice, and I want to make sure that as a city we grow together and we don't leave anyone behind. So I am a proud Democrat. I will offer that to you because you know the values and principles of a Democrat. We care about those that are marginalized, and we make sure no one's left behind, and that's what I plan to do as your next mayor of the city of Syracuse. Please vote for me on November 7th. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. That brings to a conclusion our forum. I want to thank Laura Levine, Juanita Perez-Williams, Howie Hawkins, and Ben Walsh for taking part. I want to thank Greening USA and Focus Greater Syracuse for hosting the event today. It's been my pleasure to moderate and WAER's pleasure to host and promote the event. Thank you guys for attending. This is probably not a group. Yeah, let's give... I probably don't have to tell any of you to go out and vote, but go out and vote. WAER, as I said, will air an hour-long version of today's events tomorrow night at 6, Saturday night at 6. The entire thing will be on our website, the entire audio, by sometime tonight or tomorrow morning. Go to WAER.org. We'll also be doing more pre-election coverage from now pretty much up until Election Day of November 7th. And WAER produces live election night coverage starting at 9 p.m. as the results come in, and we get to talk to these fine people at the moment of their finding out what happened. So please tune in, and again, thank you very much for participating.
Thank you.